Is this me? We'll open this meeting to rural communities and economic development.
Hit it again.
Thank you, everybody. Okay, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2345. And we will have Representative Reed come up and talk to us about it.
Give us a summary.
Oh, we have a summary?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2345A has no revenue impact and a fiscal statement has been issued. It should be in front of you. This measure creates an Oregon Innovation and Infrastructure Task Force to make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly regarding the participation in a West Coast Infrastructure Exchange to assess existing infrastructure and establish a West Coast marketplace for innovation. It also requires recommendations on strategies for establishing a center of expertise for innovative practices, methods to maximize value of public infrastructure expenditures, and responsibilities of the center of expertise to improve infrastructure systems and create a data platform for infrastructure projects.
Thank you, Representative Reed. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Tobias Reed from Beaverton. I want to play a very short role here in introducing the bill and defer to the experts who are behind me. And the story I would just introduce is comes from the reality that we have a lot of infrastructure needs in the decades to come. The things that we, some of which we can see and rely on, roads, bridges, some of which we rely on that are less visible, water and sewer infrastructure, these sorts of things that really power our daily lives. And our ability to finance the things that we're going to need to upgrade, build, refurbish, is not, our ability to finance those things does not match the need. So we are looking for ways to be innovative and to stretch taxpayer dollars to deliver better outcomes with less money. And that's what's contemplated in this bill. One example of that, our state treasurer deserves a lot of credit for commencing a conversation with his counterparts in British Columbia, in Washington, and in California. About how to pool some resources, some best practices, and to share in appropriate ways, as those who know more about me will explain later, some of the risk and some of the upside of these projects with the private sector. My experience has been that when we take on big questions like this in the legislature, there are often unexpected decisions to be made, things that we haven't anticipated if we start once the session begins. So this bill creates a task force to begin contemplating those questions, to understand the state of our statutes currently, what questions we need to grapple with in order to have a good product and a good bill in our next session. I think there is a huge opportunity here for us to build the economy in ways that have an impact in the short run and in the long run in terms of employment, in terms of capacity for the rest of the economy. And it's a chance for Oregon to continue being a real pioneer in how we build the infrastructure that powers our economy and our daily lives. So I will not bore you with further details, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you have and commend this bill to you, as well as the stories that I suspect you'll hear from others who might like to testify. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions?
Question.
Senator Brzezinski.
Representative Reed, thank you for bringing this. I guess the only question, I'm looking at the summary as to what the report date is back to the legislature, being October 1 of this year. I'm not sure if there's legislators going to be participating in this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, yes. Legislators would participate. And the date is in anticipation of the possibility of legislation in our 2014 session, in case there are things that the task force would feel comfortable with recommending to give the legislature a chance to consider those in the 2014 session.
The only, if I follow up.
Sure.
And if I think the October 1 date may be a little overachieving, anxious, not quite.
Ambitious.
Ambitious, there we go, thank you. Because we're not going to have, our first meeting will probably be in September, and so you potentially could have a committee be able to hear it or entertain it at that point. There'll be another one in December, so I'm wondering if you would want to have us to consider a later date that would be like in December, that still would be enough time to have drafting to be done, and still enough time for the task force to complete the work. Maybe it can. I'm just concerned knowing how appointments may come out if whether you'll have your full task force, if you have legislators involved to be able to participate.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pradzinski, I'm certainly open to that. I'm not hung up on the date. I'm much more interested in getting a good product.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much joining us. Okay, so we have Dan Carroll, Tom Reinhart, and Karen Williams, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Karen Williams. I'm an advisor to the governor's office. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'd like to talk with you about this approach to innovation in infrastructure that, as Mr. Steinbrecher from the Society of Civil Engineers will describe, and I'm sure as you're all well aware, our infrastructure needs over the next 20 years are in the billions, well into the billions of dollars, and that our infrastructure needs also have significant impacts on our economic stability, resiliency, and opportunities for all Oregonians to enjoy the benefits of our economy. California and Washington have similar issues, though on a larger scale. And Einstein was right. Taking the same approaches to solving our problems and expecting different results is a, I think he called it insanity. I'll be more polite and call it a not so much proposition. So we must innovate if we're going to deliver the infrastructure we need and if we're to preserve our quality of life and have a sound and resilient economy. The governor and the treasurer and their team members, some of whom are here today, have explored two different areas of innovation. One that Representative Reed described is the collaboration to establish a best practices marketplace that called the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. This is to create a market for private capital and investment in public infrastructure, a forum for best practices and interjurisdictional cooperation, and to allow Oregon to enjoy the strength of a regional market. If that strength of a regional market brings greater opportunities for innovation and private capital to us, as we believe it will, then we also need to have ways to deliver that capital into projects on the ground in a way that takes best advantage of it and that best optimizes transfer of risk to the private sector while inviting innovation. So the two innovations are the West Coast Exchange and the idea of a center of expertise. As Mr. Carroll likes to say, we're doing our best to copy the homework of somebody who got an A by copying the successful innovation to the extent it's applicable to us from British Columbia. The British Columbia's Partnerships BC has served its taxpayers very well by being a entity that manages procurements of sophisticated, innovative infrastructure so that they bring the skills and expertise to the issue to make sure that the acquisitions of infrastructure that are done in a risk-mitigated and capital-optimized way. Since 2002, they've participated in 35 projects in British Columbia and other Canadian jurisdictions with an investment value of approximately $12.5 billion, of which $5 billion has been private capital, and every project has been delivered on time and on budget. The innovation that they have really become a worldwide pioneer on is something called performance-based life cycle procurement that invites private innovation, transfers risk for on-time, on-budget delivery and long-term quality of the project, assures performance by placing private capital at risk with penalties for non-performance, stretches public dollars by leveraging private capital, results in higher value for dollars because projects are designed to reduce the long-term cost of occupancy, not just to achieve the least cost of construction,
And the program is not a transfer of assets or of a concession or privatization of government services. It is instead the public sector owning its infrastructure, but procuring it in a way that makes better utilization of private capital and transfers risk to the private sector. In the traditional model, the private partner designs and builds infrastructure with virtually all of the risk remaining with the public sector. In the partnership delivery model, the design, construction, and long-term maintenance of the project are the responsibility of the private sector with capital at risk, so that if the project isn't well-designed, built on time and on budget, and if it doesn't perform to agreed-upon standards, the private sector's capital is at risk of loss. So the public owner transfers risk, payment deductions apply if the performance standards aren't met, and this practice encourages high quality and allows for the highest teamwork in innovation and construction. Some examples that BC has produced for us, or for their taxpayers, are, for example, the Surrey Pretrial Services Center expansion. The traditional procurement method would have been a $148 million project. In this life cycle performance-based infrastructure method, the cost was $133 million. It was delivered early and provided innovations that reduced the cost of maintenance and also greatly improved the efficiency of service delivery and the overall cost of performing the activities within the building. The Sea to Sky Highway, any of you skiers have probably been from Vancouver to Whistler. This was a $600 million improvement where the private innovation added $100 million in additional safety and engineering value, and the highway resulted in 6,000 new permanent jobs because of improved economic activity in the area it served. In Oregon, we have some additional innovations that we're looking at. For instance, looking at some of our smaller communities that have failing wastewater systems are badly in need of lower cost innovative solutions for those wastewater systems. The cost of innovation for a single project is probably too great. However, if we can group those projects together and have the private sector that brings the innovation be financially responsible for its long-term performance, we may be able to overcome some engineering impasses and address the problems of our smaller communities. Another innovation area is Portland is about to convert its streetlights to LEDs. They will save over $2 million in energy costs a year by doing that. Those savings are available to Portland because of their scale. However, by bundling that project and making the cost savings through collaborative purchasing, the civil engineering through a project book, some financing tools and other things available, letting our smaller communities enjoy the advantages of scale, we think that we can bring those kinds of benefits to other communities in the state as well. So the bundling solution is to establish a statewide collaborative purchasing agreement, create project templates for civil engineering and testing, negotiate template financing agreements, and regionalize installation and maintenance providers agreements. Those are a few examples of what we think the outcomes of this task force's work may be for Oregon. If we can take these concepts of the West Coast Exchange that creates a marketplace and lets us take advantage of that marketplace for innovation and infrastructure, and then have the skills and expertise to deliver it well with mitigated risk for Oregon.
I'll be very brief. I'm Dan Kerr. I'm the Director of Multi-State Initiatives for Governor Kitzhaber. We've been working very closely with the Treasurer's Office and the help of experts like Karen Williams, used to be the General Counsel at PDC, on looking at this problem. Just very simply, I mean, we're looking at, as Karen said, a multi-billion dollar problem, a job creation opportunity, a hugely important business competition opportunity. And, you know, as we've looked at this problem, it's clear if you can finance projects the old way and we don't have a financing gap, you should do that. But the reality is, as you look at different categories in the long run, we're going to need to create these innovative methods. There's lots, actually, of capital out there, but unless government, working with the legislature, prepares these projects in ways that private capital can look at them while still maintaining public infrastructure and high road contracting standards, we're going to disadvantage ourselves competitively. So the idea of the task force, as Representative Reed pointed out, to stretch taxpayer dollars and look at what changes we might want to consider to position Oregon both within a regional economic system and to attract investors who we've heard over and over again. I'll let Tom speak to it, but you know, they're interested in finding one place in government where the experts know how to do this kind of work, as opposed to running around to different agencies. So looking at this idea of a center of expertise is something that appears to be why United Kingdom, Australia, Canada are closing an infrastructure gap with this sorts of methods, whereas the United States, you know, we just got a D+ from the American Society of Civil Engineers nationally. Look forward to any questions.
My name is Tom Reinhart, for the record. I'm Chief of Staff for State Treasurer Ted Wheeler. Thanks for having us today. I think Dan and Karen covered most of it. I thought I could tell a quick story about why the Treasurer and the Treasurer's Office has been engaged in this from the outset, and we're very proud to be working with our partners. Shortly after Treasurer Wheeler was appointed Treasurer, he tasked me with looking at the question of why the Oregon Investment Council invests hundreds of millions of dollars in infrastructure funds that then buy and manage assets overseas. Partly that came from the Treasurer driving around the state and seeing, as we all see, the state's infrastructure in disarray and crumbling. I then got on the phone with a number of different infrastructure leaders of funds that we invest in, and one of them, from a very prominent fund, said, "Tom, we would not spend an hour of a junior analyst's time at this point on working with any government entity in the United States." I asked him why that was. He said, "You don't have the experience, the legal templates, the protocols, the ability for us to invest with you side by side." So I brought that into the discussions that we're having with our partners and with other states, and it's clear that there's opportunity to figure that out in a responsible way. And if we continue down this path, I'm confident we can do it. That's why we're here firmly supporting 2345, and we stand ready to put the Treasurer's Office resources at use on the task force. Thank you.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for being here. And Tom, I've been prompt that one of you might have the answer. I was asking Representative Reed, if you're going to have legislators knowing how our system works and when appointments may occur, it seems like the October 1 day would be pretty ambitious to actually have that input from legislators. And knowing how our system is set up, it's not uncommon during the short session to have reports come in like at the end of December, and that will give us enough time to get stuff drafted. You have two dates that interim committees would be meeting, so you could actually potentially, if this is a committee that we're going to come back to in December, if the chair would be willing to do that, so we could have that heads up. You can do some more fine-tuning if you needed to. So I just throw that out for your consideration before we actually move the bill out, if you want to have the date change, if you can let us know at some point.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pozanski, we'll follow your advice on that, and we'll work with whatever people agree with on a date.
We'll make sure the Sounds chair knows and let him make that decision.
Can do a New Year's party with the report at your house.
Yes, there we go.
Question? Yes, Senator.
Yes, this is more of a comment, I guess, but I noticed in your appendix you've got different questionnaires that you sent out, but they were sent out to cities and counties, it looks like, on every occasion. And I think because the public is paying with their tax dollars, that you also should do some research on what the public's priorities are, because they may differ from what the government entities see as priority. Just a comment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Christian Steinbrecher. Christian Steinbrecher.
Good afternoon. I'm Christian Steinbrecher. I'm the president of ASCE Oregon. That's the American Society of Civil Engineers in the Oregon section. I was the editor of the report that's in front of you. That's basically a report on Oregon. That's a little bit different than the report card that you may have seen on a national basis that we prepared specifically for Oregon by Oregon engineers. ASC Oregon represents about 2,100 civil engineers, and so we feel that we've got a little bit of expertise that we can offer the legislature in suggesting how these things might go forward. But I thought it would be worthwhile to reflect on some of the things that we found out as we did this report. I spent 3 years doing this, so it puts me in a unique position of having looked at Oregon's infrastructure in perhaps a way that no one else has. So I've got some comments here I'd like to summarize here for you. You know, a nation and its prosperity depend on infrastructure. The corner of a great economy is infrastructure, whose peoples, goods, and ideas makes possible a state's accomplishments. Throughout history, the greatest nations have made the investment in first-class infrastructure. Infrastructure that does not meet the needs of Oregonians jeopardizes our Oregon's future prosperity. When there's a catastrophic failure that results in lost lives and property, infrastructure issues do make the headlines. The public then realizes the need for a strong and properly maintained infrastructure. Oregon needs to establish a comprehensive long-term infrastructure plan as opposed to the current patch and pray method. Federal funding, from our point of view, is no longer as available as it was in amounts necessary to fix our crumbling infrastructure. However, the solution involves more than money. It takes sound technology, wise community planning, and involves citizens willing to partner with the government and the private sector to make real changes. Solutions to ease the increasing demands on infrastructure systems and to provide conditions, capacity, and safety are multifaceted. It's not always necessary to build more roads, more landfills, or more airports. The price tag to replace and maintain our infrastructure systems is rising. Ways to reduce overall costs must be developed and implemented. Innovative building and construction methods and materials must be considered. Investing in research and development will help facilitate the state's ability to come up with more cost-effective solutions. After an extensive two-year effort, Oregon ASE completed its review of Oregon's infrastructure, a report that focuses on Oregon and its unique challenges. We contacted over 120 engineers, public works officials, and industry experts in Oregon, as well as extensively researching available data that focused on Oregon. We gave Oregon a C-. While Oregon shows some success in areas such as navigable waterways and solid waste, other areas, such as general aviation, are in need of substantial upgrade. And areas such as county roads have dramatic, dramatic funding shortfalls. It's not at the state level, and it's sometimes at the city level, but the county level is a disaster from our perspective. Solutions to Oregon's infrastructure must take into account the diversity that exists in Oregon in terms of land size, population density, and economic base. One size does not fit all. You know, we're the ninth largest state in the country. If Harney County, with a population of 7,705 and an area of 10,000 square miles, were a state, there would be six other states in this country that would be smaller than it. Western Oregon has 31% of the land mass, but 87% of the population. Economically, as you saw previously, we're one-tenth the size of California and a third the size of our neighbor to the north. Yet, we have 100,000 miles of river, 6,000 lakes, 360 coastline miles, 96 airports, 75,000 miles of road, 7,000 bridges, 1,000 dams, 680 miles of navigable waterways, and 2,400 miles of railroad. You know, there's a myth in Oregon. And the myth is that the pioneers were rugged individualists. But you know, history tells us that was not the case at all. They were cooperative people who understood the need to get together to help each other out. One family could not bring in the crops or raise the barns that were necessary to survive. So Oregonians got together and helped this family harvest the crops and that family to raise the barn. That is the attitude we need for the next century, that Oregonians must come together and as a group pitch in and build the next generation infrastructure. The infrastructure that we rely on was constructed in the time frame from 1945 to 1985. That's what you came in on when you came to the office here today, when you came to State Capitol. During that time, this country was the greatest economic power on the globe. There was no Chinese economy, there was no Asian economy, and the European economy had been smashed by the war. As a result, we were the wealthiest country on the face of the earth. With that wealth, we financed this great infrastructure. While I believe we're still the greatest country on the world where there is a lot of competition, the money that was available to build that infrastructure is no longer available for this generation to rebuild this infrastructure. As individual states, we must take the initiative to rebuild our own infrastructure and not wait for the federal government to step in. And this initiative, this bill, is a great example of that. In short, we need new ideas, new thinking, not just slavishly rebuilding the old. Oregonians must construct new infrastructure that will propel Oregon into the forefront in the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions?
I have a question.
Senator Close.
This is a very interesting report with a lot of good facts, and it's, you know, paints a picture of what could be in our state. But we had testimony today on the floor that 22% of Oregonians are on food stamps now. Some rural areas have 40% unemployment. This would require a lot of tax money to achieve this, and I don't see with all the unemployment how we get there. Have you considered that at all?
Well, again, the approach is what's the innovative and new methods? What you're suggesting is the old method recycled, and you're absolutely right. That won't work for this state. The economy, the way this state looks, that doesn't look the way it looked in the 70s when we first built this stuff. We have a different state and a different economy. We need different solutions. What you heard in House Bill 2345, I think is such a solution, bringing private financing into this where they carry the largest piece and perhaps the state carries the smallest piece.
Thank you.
And in that plan, they also get their return over time.
Yes.
And we put people to work. So that 22% of unemployment, or food stamps, all of a sudden have construction jobs, which is a big part of the economy that we had back in those from 48 to 85, were those constructions, whether it's roads or sewer systems. And I agree. And I think I've heard some of my constituents in Tillamook County say they have the worst county roads. So they understand.
Well, Tillamook County is a great example. Leanne Welch is a good friend of mine, and she's the public works director over there. She has $300,000 to maintain 300 miles of roadway. What are you going to do with that?
Exactly.
You're going to watch it crumble or turn it to gravel, which she is doing.
Yeah.
Has no choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And that's,
absolutely.
And so we know that there's some big issues, and so how do we find ways in which we can do that? And I appreciate the bill for that reason, because mm-hmm. I think it's really talking about how do we innovatively come up with resources public and private, to solve a public problem that we need for all of us. So, thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I think that concludes the number of people, and we're waiting for an amendment. Is that what I understand to be the case?
I didn't ask if anybody else wanted to speak.
Oh, does anybody else want to say something about this bill before we move on? Thank you. Is there any, and we do have, yes.
So, Mr. Chair, just since you were testifying, okay. There's some discussion about the date that's in the bill now. We calls for a report to be here on October 1 of this year.
Oh, wow.
I've suggested that it be moved to December 31st, giving them the opportunity to come before our committee, like in the December interim meeting, and also the concern that they do want to have legislators involved in the process, and knowing that the president and the speaker may not be able to have people
assigned
tasked to it before the October 1, and they were very receptive to doing that.
Okay. So we'll get that drafted. Okay. Then we will close our public hearing on House Bill 2345A. And I thank you very much for the testimony and the bill. And with that, we're going to open a public hearing or an informational meeting on USDA Rural Developments Program to support rural communities. So this is to answer some of your questions and to try to figure out what the federal government can do to help. And I will tell you that in many of our coastal communities, these are very important programs.
Yes.
They have been helpful to us, so we thank you.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair.
Whether it's a digester in Tillamook or other things, you guys have been a part of things that have been happening. So.
Well, first of all, I'm Vicki Walker, the State Director of USDA Rural Development, and I don't know if you deliberately tried to put this agenda together like this, but it is fortuitous that we follow that group because we have met with Karen Williams, and of course we work with Dan regularly, and we have made this presentation to our national leadership as a new way of working through some of our programs. It's a very novel idea that I think you got a great education on today, and Senator Close asked some really good questions. And it's nice to see you again.
You as well.
It's nice to be home.
Exactly.
And I do want to introduce my staff, one of my fabulous staff, and because as you always heard me say in the legislature, you're only as good as your staff. Jill Reese is our public affairs coordinator, and also our community development coordinator, and also our tribal liaison coordinator. So Jill basically does it all. And as you know, Mr. Chair, she's done a lot. We were involved in your meeting last year on the
yes.
coast.
And hopefully again this year.
And we are. And she works well with Rosie, who is your fabulous staff.
Yep.
So Anyway, members of the committee, it is great to be here. Absolutely awesome. And I am so excited. Jill is going to be my Vanna White today because I don't talk and do things at the same time very well. So this is a picture of Maupin, Oregon, in the southwest part or the southern part of Wasco County. It's absolutely beautiful there. Let me tell you the story. There's a little story about Maupin. A couple of years ago, the only grocery store in town, in fact, it's the only one for 40 miles, was closing down. So a willing buyer stepped in to purchase the market. Well, how were they going to do it? They did it with us. They did it with USDA Rural Development. We partnered with the Mid-Columbia Economic Development District, the Small Business Administration, and a local lender to help provide financing. That is leveraged funding because we can't write the big check anymore. We have to do the leveraged funding, and this is how it works. So through our intermediary relending program that we refer to as the IRP program, we provided seed capital to the Economic Development District. They established a revolving loan fund that in turn provides those low-interest loans to help with purchases and renovation of this essential small business. We do that all over Oregon, in almost every district in Oregon, and I'll be highlighting some of those that we do. This is just one small grocery store, but it's strategic assistance and leverage funding, and that's what I want to talk about today. We need vibrant rural communities, as you know, in order to develop and sustain all of those resources and the quality of life that we're looking for, and to make sure we keep people employed. It's important to note that for these well-tended rural landscapes, we have to have a countryside that creates opportunity within Oregon's urban communities. People live in rural Oregon because they love rural Oregon. And our urban counterparts like to go to rural Oregon because it's beautiful and they play there. So we like to tell you about, often you hear the phrase, there are two Oregons. Well, downtown versus down on the farm, hubs of activity compared to laid-back boondocks, or worse, the concept that urban centers of commerce are somehow compensating for their country cousins. I completely reject that notion and have ever since I took over as director of this agency in 2009. Not only does Oregon embody all of these core values that make it a fantastic place to live, and trust me, when I go to our national meetings, Oregon is on the map, and I talk about the great things we do here. Our urban and rural centers are mutually dependent. Our economic fates intertwine, and we need to recognize that. Scholars at Oregon State University did recognize that, and here's a great book if you have not read it. It's called Toward One Oregon, and it was published by OSU Press in 2011. And the folks at Oregon State University, the Rural Studies Program, have been terrific partners with us. I sought them out early on with my appointment, and even though I'm an Oregon duck, I said that you folks do great work, and I'm going to be a beaver for a while. So we continue to do that. And under the direction of President Obama and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, we are committed to those efforts to create an environment of rural success. So we've got some slides here that Jill put together, and this is what is so awesome about our programs. There's too many of them to talk about. So what this does, Jill tried to put it in perspective, we are really three agencies. We're the Rural Housing Service, the Rural Utility Service, and the Rural Business Services. And those three agencies comprise the Rural Development Mission Area. Trust me, I thought working for state government was a little bit complicated, but when you get to the federal government, it's even worse. So they like to make it difficult to figure it all out, but we are here to make it seem real and put together. So we administer more than 40 programs in our different program areas. We have farm, food safety, forestry programs most people think of when they're referring to USDA, but unlike those kinds of programs,
Our program role supports economic development, housing, and infrastructure build-out, which is what you just heard about in that presentation. We have loans, loan guarantees, grant systems that all support essential public facilities and services, water, sewer systems, health clinics, emergency service facilities, electric, and broadband. And some of our slides will highlight some of those things. We provide low-interest loans and grants for home ownership and repair, and I have to tell you that Oregon's home ownership program, our program, probably kept the housing market alive in the last 2 years. Our program has no down payment required. We have a low-interest program, we have a low-income program, and we have a moderate-income program for people who use a guaranteed lender. And we guarantee the loan. If you're low income, the loan comes directly from us. We are the lender. And I don't know where you can go today, who today has the money set aside to put a down payment on a home. It's just very, very difficult when people are struggling. So I love that about our program, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. You'll find more detailed information in your handouts, and Senator Brzezinski already chastised me for printing it out, but you also got it electronically. But my staff is always here to help you navigate. We have offices, our state offices in Portland, so I still commute. I live in Eugene. But we have offices in Tangent, in your district, Senator Close, and we have offices in Roseburg that serve the southern part of the state, Senator Bartschiger, down to you. We go all the way down that far, and Redmond serves that half of the state and south, and then we have Pendleton, and we have a couple of satellite offices with one or two people in them. But let's go to the investment slides. This is the number that will just knock your socks off. $2.4 billion in rural Oregon investments from 2009 to 2012. $2.4 billion. That's a lot of money. That's not chump change. Home ownership loans, $1.6 billion. You'll see that's the bulk of that, half of that. 10,500 loans. 10,500 families were able to get into a home in that time period due to our program. Water and environmental was $105 million. Community facilities, $30.5 million. Telecommunications, 67.3, electric programs, 54.7, and our rural business and cooperative program, $414.5 million. That one is extremely successful in many of our rural communities, and we'll talk about that. Our next slide is the self-help housing slide. This is really a cool program. As I mentioned, we had 10,500 home loans totaling $1.6 billion. Well, most of these loans are for the purchase of existing homes, some, or they can have a home built. Some are also made through local self-help programs, like the one administered by Community Home Builders, which used to be known as Yamhill CDC. They're an awesome group of folks. Since 2008, we have provided them with $1.8 million in technical assistance funds to develop these home sites and supervise construction of 62 homes. So what happens is these homeowners get together and they apply for a loan through our program. Community Home Builders then brings in a construction manager. They go through some training with the homeowners and they build their own homes. Now, someone comes in and lays the foundation and the walls, so we get that straight. And they have people come in and do the plumbing and the electrical, but they do the painting, they do the caulking. In fact, one family I asked, what was your favorite thing to do? And the woman responded, the caulking. I loved caulking. also the Community Home Builders recently built some LEED certified homes. Where was that? I'm trying to think of which. We had one of our state senator or our U.S. senators come out to that. That was in Jervis. That was great. So their mortgages are reduced by as much as 65% with their sweat equity. That's really cool. And you have people who've never owned a home before, and they get to build it with their own hands. We have very little turnover in that program. Once they build their home, they're usually in it for life. So that's really cool. Then we offer repair assistance, and these programs I wish I'd have known about when I was a state senator. In fact, I didn't know any of these programs existed. Because these programs help homeowners, they help fixed-income seniors make critical repairs. So if they have a roof that leaks, they need to hook up their septic system to the sewer because the city's finally brought in sewer and they're going to say, well, you've got to hook it up. Well, we provide assistance to these folks. We provide grant and 1% interest loans. That's basically free money. That's really a good deal. We also have a housing preservation grant program, and we've worked with the Siletz Tribe, that's in your district, Mr. Chair, to repair siding and roofing on aging homes in low-income tribal members. In addition to that, we have over 200 USDA-financed multifamily facilities around the state. They offer affordable housing to seniors, disabled residents, families, and farm workers statewide. Nearly 5,000 Oregon households living in these apartments receive our rental assistance to keep their housing costs at or below 30% of their take-home pay. Last year, our rental assistance was $14.5 million in this state. And Senators Przyjanski, Senator Close, and Senator Barsugar, I have just been down to visit multifamily housing facilities in your communities. I was in Vineta, Cottage Grove, Brownsville, Harrisburg, Junction City, and Grants Pass. I travel a lot. We just got back from Burns, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But my goal is to make sure that I go out and visit these facilities firsthand to make sure that my staff is doing what is necessary to ensure this is a place where you yourself would leave a family member, would put a family member to live. That's important to me, absolutely important to me. It's my goal that we provide that safe housing. So our next slide is about Lakeview. This is really cool what we've done in Lakeview. I love all our stuff, but this is really exciting. So Lakeview, we plan ahead. So nearly $20 million in USDA financing allowed Lake District Hospital to expand its facilities and services. They're the only critical access hospital serving 45,000 rural residents in Southern Oregon. With these renovations, the hospital added modern emergency, imaging, pharmacy, surgery, lab, cardiopulmonary departments. In fact, this was hysterical. The hospital chief of staff told me these improvements helped with recruiting talented young doctors, which is hard to do in remote areas. But what was really fun to hear is that they've increased the birth rate in their community. He doesn't know why, but suddenly there's more babies being birthed at their hospital. So we have not only created economic development, but we're growing the community exponentially. This didn't happen with just USDA money, though. That is, again, why I want to emphasize that we leverage funds. Financial commitment came from passage of a bond measure, the backing from what was then South Valley Bank, they've now been purchased by another bank, and a $2.9 million loan from the state of Oregon. So you all had something to play in this development. But now what is really cool about that is when we put in the expansion, we said, okay, let's plan ahead. Geothermal is huge in this community. Let's outfit the hospital for geothermal. So we did that in the expansion project. Meanwhile, State of Oregon came in with cool schools and outfitted the schools, the five schools in the area, to be able to receive geothermal. So now we're in stage two, and we're running the pipes from the geothermal well to these facilities. And we are going to lower their heating costs. And you know, as well as I do, the school districts struggle to find funds. So this is going to help schools. This is in Senator Whitsitt's district. We always invite you all down to see these projects when we cut the ribbon and do all of that. So be sure when Jill sends out an email, if you want to be in on the action, we'll make it happen. Here's another cool thing, Warm Springs Tribe. We work with all nine tribal nations pretty regularly. It's critical for us to do that. The Warm Springs, we brought broadband to this community. We need to compete in a global economy. Every part of Oregon, rural Oregon, as you know, Mr. Chair, you've heard it in your communities. They've got to have broadband to be able to connect to the outside world. And if they're a small business, they have to connect to the urban areas and the urban centers. We also want to provide that opportunity for people to access online college courses and worker training. So broadband's essential. So here we started this project in Senator Ferriola's district with a little tiny money. In 2007, we started planning. What would we do? Would broadband work on this reservation? So we gave them a little grant, and they did a feasibility study. They came back. They put in some computer labs in a facility along the highway. Then we came back. They waited for the Recovery Act funds, and we got $5.4 million in loans and grants to provide state-of-the-art fiber and fixed wireless networks to offer everyone on the 644,000-acre reservation access to broadband and telephone. And you know what's cool about that? There's a lot of cool things. But this is really cool because about a third of the people who live on that reservation had no access to basic phone service or internet. No phone service. A third. That's a lot of folks. And they are a reservation that has high unemployment. You talked about that, Senator Close, about the high unemployment. They're right up there along with the Klamath tribe. So the development here was significant. And it's important to note that as a result of this, the tribe has created its own telecom company. They are now the ninth tribal telecom in the United States. So they thought ahead. They're working to increase their economy, and this provides opportunities for members and businesses. We're going to switch gears a little bit and go into water and wastewater. You need to flush the loo, and to do that, you have to have the infrastructure. We're going to talk about a system in Betsy Johnson, Senator Betsy Johnson's district, and I understand she's doing much better these days, so I'm glad to hear that. She's had quite a tribulation here with her accident. But this process, this was really neat. This was Miles Crossing on the North Coast. 900 residents, this is such a great story, 900 residents of this small community were dealing with failing septic systems. I know you all have that going on in your district somewhere. There was no sewer system. It made matters worse, and the community is on a low-lying, wet ground, creating an environmental hazard. So we have all these things piling up. What are they going to do? To resolve the problem, each resident would have had to install an expensive new septic system at $25,000 a pop. Who's got that kind of money? That would only have been a temporary solution. So we came in, we worked with the community, we provided loans and grants to install a low-maintenance, energy-efficient vacuum sewer system that pipes wastewater across Young's Bay to the city of Astoria for processing. This was great collaboration. In addition to our funding, Oregon Community Development Block Grant money went into this for the engineering design. The ratepayers, as Senator Johnson would say, put skin in the game, and they created incremental rate increases for them so they wouldn't have sticker shock in the end. And Chair Roblin, not only have we done this, but we've nearly completed our sanitary project in Neatarts, and that is in the northern tip of your district. And not to be forgotten, Senator Przanski, we have put in a wastewater project in Sutherland, and we're almost complete with one in Lowell. So you see there are communities all over the state. They have failing systems, particularly along the coast where weather's been a problem. These small communities just don't know what to do. So we come in and we help. Now, we're going to switch gears and we're going to go to something and talk about jobs. ORPET. I don't know if you guys know about ORPET, but if you don't, it is one of the greatest things we have done for Oregon because of the bottle bill. This is a terrific economic development project. As you know, our iconic bottle bill said we're going to require a deposit on cans and bottles. Ever since 1971, and before I left this body in 2009, we even changed that up a bit, and we added water bottles to the mix. But until last year, there was no Oregon-based facility to recycle these plastic bottles. So for years, guess where we shipped them? China. We shipped them to China. And we shipped jobs to China because of that. So U.S. manufacturers had to buy the processed raw materials back from China and pay for the shipping. Very, very inefficient. So working with Pacific Pet Recycling and the Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative, USDA Rural Development was able to provide a guarantee on a $4.9 million loan for the purchase of recycling equipment and development of the recycling facility in Warren, Oregon. The Port of St. Helens also provided support, as did the State of Oregon, with more than $1 million in energy tax credits. Again, leverage, leverage, leverage. The facility opened last April. I was there for the grand opening. There were so many people. A high school band came and played. It was really awesome. We created 50 new family wage American jobs with benefits, and they have plans to grow in the future. Mr. Chair and members of this committee, nothing delighted me more than to take those jobs back from China and put them to work in this timber-dependent community that has lost a number of jobs due to mill closures. So you see, I get goosebumps when I talk about our stuff. The OrPET project shows how we maximize the value of recycled products. We're also very, very involved in expanding that bio-based economy. I don't know if you're familiar with the Zeochem refinery in Boardman. That's in Senator Hansel's district. They're currently operating a 250,000-gallon demonstration facility at the site. We have issued a conditional commitment of $198.5 million in a loan guarantee for the construction of the $25 million gallon refinery. It will use agricultural residue from the area. It will use woody biomass from the nearby Greenwood Resources Popular Farm that you see along I-84, and I toured that farm. That is really a neat place. They are growing the biomass material in between the trees, and they can do that until the trees reach a certain height, and then they harvest the biomass material and they will provide it to Zeochem. They've entered into a contract. They'll also use the poplars to sell to Zeochem if, depending on the price of the market. If the wood market's better, they'll sell them for wood. If not, they'll use it for biomass. So this is a tree farm, and it is one big tree farm. So we have helped create this project with good-paying jobs. It'll provide a new market for agricultural products. And not only that, they're collaborating with five institutions of higher learning in three different states, so colleges and universities in three different states. So we are seeing a lot of opportunity here. The president, the secretary are very excited about this. Another project that we work on is biomass and our resources in our forests. Now, I'm going to be very clear about this. The agencies I represent are not involved, and this is my blanket statement, we are not involved in making or administering forest management policy. I'm not going to talk about the spotted owl, the marbled murrelet, or the sage grouse. What we do is help communities and entrepreneurs develop the capacity to explore their business models, conduct market and feasibility studies, and expand commercialization of these technologies using forest products. As an example, in 2009, USDA provided a $500,000 grant to Sustainable Northwest. What they did was to advance economic development solutions in the dry forest zone in 12 Oregon counties, as well as three counties in Northern California. This funding allowed them to help support forest-based small businesses development. Wallawa Resources and Enterprise has been developing and testing business models to create sustainable jobs through that commercial development and utilization of biomass. Wallawa Resources is just an incredible organization. We have gone over to Enterprise. We took an international group of visitors over to Enterprise in Wallawa County to look at the work that they have done and how they have partnered and leveraged funds to bring it home to their community. In 2011, we, through the Rural Business Enterprise Grant Program, we provided the Klamath Tribes with a $99,000 grant to evaluate the feasibility of a tribal forest restoration enterprise that could generate fee-for-service work in federal, state, and private forests. And through our Advanced Biofuel Producer Payment Program, we've provided more than and $2.8 million to expand the production of advanced biofuels. And here in Oregon, that includes the production of wood pellets, which have been really successful in various parts of our state. Through our community facilities program, we help fund the biomass heating facility at Grant County Regional Airport in John Day. That's in Senator Ferrioli's district. Jill and I went down there, visited that. That is a LEED certified building. That is an awesome building. And here we have our biomass facility right outside heating and cooling the facility, and it's pretty cool. They have saved about $30,000 a year in energy costs with this program. So this is what we do. Now that we're talking about energy, I want to talk a little bit about the Renewable Energy for America program. This one is very, very popular across the country, and especially here in Oregon. Over the past 4 years, we've provided $5.1 million in small grants to help businesses, small rural businesses, farmers, and ranchers install renewable energy and energy efficiency. We visited some in Klamath Falls. A veterinarian, Klamath Falls, has installed solar in both of his veterinarian facilities and saved money. And after he did it, we started getting a lot of requests from veterinarians around the state. And so I asked him, I said, did you have a conference where you talked about this? And he said, yes. And so everyone was real excited about it. We did some solar projects for Easy Orchards right outside of Salem here. It's one of my favorite places to go when I head out to visit my sister out in Monitor. And they did solar for their facility. In addition to these biomass projects, we've provided grant funding for 36 energy efficiency projects, two anaerobic digesters that I affectionately called poop digesters, and Jill reminds me that's not professional to say that, and I say it anyway because that's the coolest closed-loop system I have ever seen in my life. If you've ever seen an anaerobic digester at work, I mean, the cow eats the grass, and the grass comes out. It goes into the digester. We send out the energy, and not only that, the leftovers get back to the farmer, and they use it to put in the stalls for the cows. So, because it's all clean grass and all nice, good stuff. So that's a closed-loop system. I absolutely love it. We have a couple of them in Tillamook County where we have a lot of cows. And we've also done 97 solar projects around the state. We don't do these alone. We do them in conjunction with the Oregon Department of Energy and the Oregon Institute of Technology in Klamath Falls to assist rural businesses. So let's switch to food because that always gets us where we need to be. In addition to all these things we do, we're very committed to regional food systems. Mrs. Obama has been a strong proponent in bringing fresh local food into our nation's schools, raising awareness, enlisting our agency's help in trying to address food deserts in both urban and rural communities. Among our large body of work in this area, our financial support of the Food Hub website that we have listed up here, operated by EcoTrust and Senator Burdick's home city, provides benefits across rural Oregon and the Northwest, and you're about to learn how successful this has been. If you're not familiar with Food Hub, it's an online marketplace. It connects farmers, ranchers, fishers, did you notice that, Mr.?
I heard that.
Mr. Chair. That's a long story. We'll take up another day. The fishers, bakers, dairies, food processors, and others who are buyers and sellers who are looking for fresh, local, regional options. Food Hub provides that central nexus so that people can go online and find out where the needs are. And, hey, I've got tomatoes today, or, hey, I'm taking a truck from Eastern Oregon into Portland or into Salem. Do you want to get some room on my truck? That's more energy efficient. So how did we start this? In 2007, it was an itty-bitty little grant of $12,500 for the initial planning. In 2009, when they were successful, we provided a little bit more money for ongoing development. Then in 2012, we got serious, and we gave them a $250,000 grant to develop and expand Food Hub across the region. They now have more than 4,500 registered buyers and sellers $1 million on the site. In fact, Oregon's Farm to School program, which you all set up here in the legislature, has incorporated Food Hub into their program to help food service directors in our schools source and serve healthy food. Overall, this project has created significant economic activity because what they're reporting to us is they've employed 23% more full-time employees and 38% more part-time employees in 2012 through all of the businesses who use Food Hub. So this all started with our little tiny grant, and this is a model that we hope to replicate across the country. And our agency does this a lot. When we give these large grants, we do it to programs that have a regional significance and that we think can be replicated around the country so that we can do all of the financial work, get it all together, and then market around the rest of the country. Some other examples, Umpqua Indian Foods in Senator Cruz's district, we help them conduct feasibility studies. They have the greatest jerky around. They have, if you eat meat, I eat less of it now. I eat mostly fish. But anyway, we help them with their jerky products and some of their other tribally owned food processing items. We also funded business training for emerging food businesses and producers, such as the Southern Oregon Farmer Incubator, administered by the Rogue Initiative for a Vital Economy. It's called Thrive. And Senator Close, we came back to your district because we funded a business training program for emerging food businesses in your area as well. So through our value-added producer grant program, we also work with food and a variety of producers. Did I skip a page, Jill? Okay, good. I had that worried look from you. We helped, gave a grant to the Oregon Cheese Guild so that they could integrate their marketing effort for cheesemakers. We have a lot of cheesemakers in Oregon. In fact, Rogue Creamery's cheese has won international awards for their blue cheese, which is wonderful. But given time, I'd tell you more about these. I'd tell you about everything in everybody's district, but I can't. So if you want to know more about our food programs, our Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative was spearheaded by former Deputy Secretary Kathleen Merrigan. She just left the agency, but she left behind a legacy of investment in local foods. And on our website, you can find the Know Your Food Compass, and it can show you where all of our food projects are around the country. So we get down to the end to talk about partnerships, and this is really important. We talked about food because it always brings us together, and that's why I baked for you when I was here. Some of you didn't get to experience that, but I bake cinnamon rolls and cheesecakes because, you know, you get to a point in the session where people are kind of cranky with one another. Well, food can bring people together. You understand that. But short of baking our way to success, we have to consider how, as decision makers, we are going to go forward and support organizations and bring these rural communities together. So if you notice, one of the common themes throughout our presentation today has been about leveraging local, regional, national, and private sources. And these are the things that were talked about with the presentation just before us. The longer I have served in this position, this is my fourth year now, I'm convinced that our collective ability to assist rural communities is really dependent upon that continued enhanced coordination with all of the federal, state, local agencies and our foundations. So on that note, Jill and I this year were thinking, how can we do better? Because we're always thinking about how we can do better. So we looked at the Oregon Rural Development Council. This was established in the early 1990s as part of a national initiative creating state rural development councils that were used to promote rural program and policy coordination. And as such, that's comprised of representation from a broad-based interest from all the entities I've been talking about today. The ORDC is politically neutral, so we're not into the politics that drive some of our issues today. We really serve as conveners to address local rural needs and issues, and we want to develop inclusive partnerships. Our meetings have helped to leverage millions of dollars for infrastructure and economic development. In fact, one of the co-chairs of the Rural Development Council, Chris Marco, received an award last year, a national award, for his work on the ORDC. The ORDC's activities included, originally contributed to the original State Community Economic Revitalization Teams, the ERTs. It was our work that sort of led to the development of those. One ORDC convening resulted in the development of long-range water resources plans, which led to the evolution of the integrated water resources strategy that was adopted in 2012. That all came out of all those convenings. Other ORDC forums served as opportunities for federal agencies to market business programs and led to support for many rural projects, such as the replacement of septic tanks around Garrison Lake in Port Orford. There are many examples of how ORDC has fostered the meaningful collaborations, but unfortunately, over the past 5 years, they have been less active due to less funding. So in the interim, there have been a number of efforts that have been put together to help rural communities go forward. The governor created regional solutions teams. We work with them regularly. We're a big fan of what they do. We've directed our staff to work with them, prioritize our funding. And, in fact, we're working with a regional solutions team right now on a project in Curry County. That's a little south of you, Mr. Chair, but it is on manufactured housing. Curry County has the highest concentration of manufactured housing in the state. They also have some of the poorest people in the state. And so you can imagine the state of some of their homes. We are working on a pilot project with the Regional Solutions Team to see what we can do as our agency and others collaborating on decommissioning some of these homes that cannot be saved, on creating energy efficiency and making sure people have safe, affordable housing. The governor was really impressed with what our plan is and hopes that we can use this as a model around the state. And in fact, today, Cindy Finlayson cornered me in the hallway and said, I want to talk to you about a potential project in Umatilla County because we've got a high concentration of mobile homes that really need help. And I said, oh my goodness, wait till you see what we're doing in Curry County. So our national office is watching this project very closely. In 2004, Governor Kulongoski created the Office of Rural Policy through executive order. Unfortunately, that office met its demise with budget cuts. And so a lot of folks were disappointed. Where were we going to go from here? So that's why we're looking at reinvigorating the Oregon Rural Development Council, because there's a need for that broad-based, neutral collaboration to bring in all of these agencies. And we met with the governor's chief of staff earlier, and he said, well, but we do that with the regional solutions teams. And I said, no, not really. We, through the Oregon Rural Development Council, are at a level a little bit higher than that to bring in all the agencies. Because I have to tell you, a lot of federal agencies don't play with our state partners. And a lot of federal agencies don't play with one another. So our goal with the Rural Development Council is to bring that all together and increase that collaboration and the multilateral efforts. And doing so, we can build on that progress in the future. If you think I'm asking you for money, I'm not. So don't. I knew you thought the ask was coming. You know, you just had that look. I'm not going to ask you for money because
I'm committee. That's true.
Ask away.
Yeah, ask away. That's right. They take it up with ways and means. No, what I'm telling you about Rural Development Councils, because we're going to have a convening at the Regards to Rural Conference in Corvallis. That'll be held on June 22nd. RDI, Rural Development Initiatives, puts together the Regards to Rural Conference, and they do a fabulous job at this conference. And we decided that we would, at the end of that conference, we would get together and convene our partners and talk about reinvigorating the Oregon Rural Development Council. So that's what we are going to do. I'm committed, as since I'm on the executive committee, I'm committed to keeping you posted about our progress, and would encourage you to be involved in any way that you can or desire. This is all about strategic development. It's about strategic partners, putting our money where it needs to be. I want you to know that rural Oregon's alive and well. I know you know that, Mr. Chair. You live in it. You all live in a piece of rural Oregon, every single one of you. And when I served in this august body, I wanted to meet the needs of my constituents just like you. So our agency is here to do that. And I wanted to get back to Burns, because we just got back from Burns last week. We drove over there to visit with the Burns Paiute Tribal Council. It is a very small tribe, about 341 people, 351, but a vibrant, excited tribe about their future. Jill and I met with their community tribal leaders to explore economic development opportunities. And then the next day we met with Judge Grasty and members of the county commission. And yes, that Oregon Youth Authority is alive and well over there. And I committed to telling you all that it's a good thing that it's still there. So I made good on that commitment. But we met with the county the next day. And I think we have some vision here. We're going back. We're going back in early June to visit with the county's Economic Development Committee. The tribal chairwoman was here today at Tribal Day, and I talked with her again today, and she's very excited about that meeting. And we've got some real opportunities for Harney County. It is a huge county, and one of the presenters today indicated that there are six states that are about the size of Harney County. You know, I'm committed to moving rural Oregon forward. President Obama is very committed. So is Secretary Vilsack. And I know you are as well, because I don't think there are two Oregons. I'm confident you're going to like what you see with what we do. We get out there week in, week out. I travel a lot. I can't tell you how many miles we put on our vehicles getting to where we are, because Oregon is the ninth largest state geographically. And I tell my national office that every darn time I see them. And we have had them out here. We've had our undersecretaries out here, and we've had the secretary out here. And we get them in a car, and we travel the state. And when they can't get on their iPad out in rural Oregon with no cell service, they get a little nervous. And they appreciate the beauty. They appreciate the beauty, but they also understand the challenges. And that's what I'm here to do with this agency. I was never a real quiet person when I was here, and I'm not real quiet at the agency. I sometimes worry they get annoyed with me, but I don't think so. I think they appreciate and respect that I understand what the needs are here in Oregon, and I'm going to fight for it because we have a right to access those federal funds like the rest of us. So, Jill, did I miss anything? She's been very quiet today. I've really actually trained her to be more open and gregarious, but today she's been quiet. Did you want to add anything that I missed?
I did just want to say something about the Oregon Rural Development Council, if I may. We had a question earlier from...
Be sure and put your name down for the record.
Oh, state who you are for the record.
I'm sorry. I'm Jill Reese with USDA Rural Development. And I just want to let you know, we had a question about the Oregon Rural Development Council from Mr. Robinold. And he asked, why is that different from the regional solutions teams, as Vicki mentioned? And, you know, just to provide a little bit more clarity on that, is that the regional solutions teams are terrific, and they're focusing on projects and progress. They take the important projects that are identified in the region and get them done, and we contribute to those whenever we can. What's different about the Oregon Rural Development Council is it's a mechanism where we can take a step back and try to look more strategically. Because, frankly, when we get the call from maybe a regional solutions team or a community saying, I have this project, things aren't going so well, do you have money? It's often not enough time to work in the federal space and plan ahead and get the funds for those projects. So what we're trying to do is find a mechanism that lets us look strategically at where we're going to go, where the needs are out in the future, so that we can fit those needs that you all have in your communities into our work plans and into the federal priorities in a way that works, and that's not always easy. So that's kind of our logic behind wanting the Oregon Rural Development Council, is to enhance our ability to invest in those regional projects.
Well said. So have you got any questions, Mr. Chair? I talked a lot today.
No, you have. It's actually really good information. I don't have a whole lot of questions. I'm getting a better picture of what all you can do. And I will tell you, it grows each time I hear you guys talk.
I know.
I get in this little box of where it is, and then you make it bigger.
So, well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll tell you, when I first came into the agency, I met with all my program directors to really learn everything. It was a very steep learning curve. And by about the third day, my head was spinning. I just was like, oh, my God, there are too many programs here. And so finally, my housing program director, he broke it down for me, and it made total sense. He said, our agency, we build a city. We basically build the city from the ground up because we provide all the infrastructure, all the sewer and the wastewater and the hospitals and the clinics, the fire stations, all that you need to make sure you've got public safety and everything. And then we build the houses for you to live in. And then we come in with our business programs and we help the businesses grow and prosper and we put the people to work. So it was a great way for me to finally understand that this agency is all about economic development, and housing is economic development. And we work very closely with our state partners on those projects. And we work closely with Margaret Van Vliet, Director of Oregon Housing Community Services, on our multifamily housing projects and our farm worker housing. We just celebrated the opening of one in Forest Grove. We worked with Bienestar on that project. And a few years ago, we worked with CASA on one in Madras. These are wonderful facilities that you'd be proud to have children live in and grow up in. And for Earth Day, Jill and I traveled out to Boardman and went to our facility there and had the kids involved in learning about Earth Day projects. And we even dragged Jill's husband, a teacher, out, and he stole the show from all of the rest of us who were volunteers because he was so good with those kids, teaching them about kinetic energy and things. And it was pretty awesome. The kids had a great time. And that's called Castle Rock Apartments, and that was just built a couple of years ago, and it's near a school. When we put the self-help house in Jervis, the school district was so excited because it was just a couple blocks from the school, and we suddenly increased the number of children going to school in that school district because of these families. And these families, because they work together and they build the houses together, and no family is allowed to move in before all the families can move in. So because they've worked together, you know, it was difficult. It's a little difficult sometimes. It's challenging. It's like you all working together in the legislature. It can be challenging at times, and when it works great. And so these families, when they're all done and they settle in, they have made lifelong friends, and they can all take care of their families and watch out for each other in the neighborhood because they know each other. They know each other very well. So that's what's really exciting about our program. I love it. I love getting out into the rural communities because they want economic development, too, and they like where they live, and Oregon's a great place.
So infrastructure, would that be kind of like keeping our harbors free, dredging? And
you know, I got,
honey, we can go
I got hit up about the Port of Coos Bay out in the hallway today, and I got asked about the railroad, And well, actually, Mr. Chair, I'm going to respond to you because, you know, there's a project at Jordan Cove that may or may not go forward with LNG in your community. Well, here's the deal. Where are all those workers going to sleep?
Live. Well, we have that issue. We're working on that right now.
Well, we are, and I'm going to tell you how we're coming in on
okay.
that. So we can't have a giant man camp under your bridge.
Right.
So,
well, they're thinking about that.
Yeah, well, that, you know, they had to do that.
Big TV.
Yeah.
They had to do that in Lakeview when
yes.
they built the hospital. There wasn't
sure.
enough housing, so they had a giant man camp. And I made the comment, aren't there any women?
That's right.
You know, and they said, well, it's just colloquially called a man camp. But in Coos Bay, they've got their thinking caps on,
yep.
and they did an inventory of, well, you probably know this, they did an inventory of all the downtown buildings that are older, maybe they're empty, and they were looking for what we could turn into housing stock. But you know what? They're not sure that's going to work. So they came to see me, and they said, we need some money for feasibility studies to determine if what we're thinking is really going to work, because nobody wants to put a bunch of money into something that's not going to work. So we said, okay, perfect timing. As Jill mentioned, it's not always easy timing when our money is available in the federal government. And right now, we have an application period for the Rural Business Enterprise Grant. So the City of Coos Bay is working on an application as we speak on doing a feasibility study on if we have that, turn that into housing for the workers, then can we recycle that into housing for seniors, disabled, and the retirees, and any other citizens that live in your community? Because you know as well as I do, I'm a graduate of Reedsport High School, so I know that Coos Bay is the center of the universe for retirees. They love Coos Bay, and so we're working with the city on that project, and hopefully their application comes in and it's funded, and we can provide that feasibility study. And that just came from an offhand comment someone made to me, and then my brain started thinking, and I said, wait, I think we can help. So when you're talking to your constituents, when you go back home to your communities and you look around and you think about that, don't hesitate to call us. It might work, it might not, but not only that, we also might be able to connect you with one of our other federal agencies that plays a little hard to get and maybe doesn't get out there as much as we do. So we're here, and we've got staff. It's been reduced with the sequester and the reduced budgeting. We lost about 30% of our staff, but they're still very dedicated, and they love what they do.
Yeah, we're looking at the rail to transport the people from the city out to the work site.
Oh.
As opposed to having all these cars on the roads.
That's a great idea. Now, if I could just get my two Talgo trains out there
That's
to
right.
start running. I ride the Amtrak, you know. I'm an Amtrak rider. I come up from Eugene on Tuesdays. I telework on Mondays and Fridays, unless Jill's got me out in the hinterlands. And I drive to Salem, so I have a car during the week. I catch the Amtrak at 6:42 a.m., and I get to Portland anywhere from 7:40 to 8:40, depending on the rail traffic of the day, and then I take the MAX, and I ride it the rest of the week. So I am an Amtrak. It's a 13-hour day for me. I get home at 7:22 at night if the train's on time. So I'm tired a lot, but I work on the train. In fact, last night I worked on the train editing this, and I realized I made a spelling error. It's a typo, and that was my fault. So anyway, that was late-night train work. But that kind of transportation is needed in Oregon to get people around. And I have seen, I've been riding the train for 4 years now, and I have seen the ridership increase exponentially on the Amtrak Cascades. It's incredible. We just see a lot of folks riding that train. So if you have a chance to support that investment, that's a good thing.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator Boettcher.
What do you perceive the funding level going to be here in the future?
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, that is always up to Congress. But I can tell you Congress likes their programs. What usually gets cut is the staff to deliver the programs, unfortunately. But they do like their programs, and they like their programs because of what they do. They like the programs because they enhance economic development in your communities. So I suspect the funding will continue. We found another $60 million to put into the Renewable Energy for America program. Congress found it from somewhere, and we just got notified of it. So we've extended the application period till May 31st for that program because we've got $60 million now to spread out among all 50 states and in Puerto Rico. And, you know, I'm in the Western region. There's 13 states in the Western region, and my Western region counterparts include Alaska and Hawaii. And Hawaii has, I think, his region has 8 time zones. When he goes to, I think when he goes to Guam, he goes to another day. So we work hard to try to deliver these programs. But to answer your question about the funding, it's really up to Congress. And Jill looks like she wants to say something in response to that. She always keeps me on the straight and narrow. You know, I like to go off script, and Jill likes to bring me back around and say, excuse me, this is the canned response. So, Jill, what have you got to keep me straight and narrow?
Well, Senator, I just want to say regarding funding, we don't know, but the trends have been that our funding levels have remained fairly high, even mm-hmm. as we're seeing a lot of uncertainty in the federal budget. And like Vicki said, it's been staff that's been reduced, and travel, training, other expenses. We don't print things. You know, we don't give you coffee mugs anymore, things like that. But that just reinforces the need for us to collaborate better with our state agencies, mm-hmm. our other federal partners, because we're staff challenged, but we still have money to get out the door. So that's another reason why we're really pursuing the increased interest in the Oregon Rural Development Council. We think that can help us administer the funds in spite of the challenges.
And that's, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that wasn't a canned answer. That's a good answer because we have to leverage. And I took Jill to lunch early in this fiscal year, and I said, you know, we need to do it differently this year. Before, we had all that ARRA money we had to get out the door, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Oh, my gosh. There was so much money coming into this state that we had to get moving. And so we didn't have time to look at the bigger picture. So this year, I took her to lunch, and I sat her down, and I said, you know what? We got to do it differently. Let's think, instead of just so project-focused, because sometimes our folks get very project-focused. They're told that they have to get projects out the door. We get money, get the projects out the door. But I want to look more at the larger economic development aspect of it, like your committee work here. How can we determine what the community needs are beyond just the fire station, beyond the hospital expansion? So we really wanted to ramp up that work with the Rural Development Council because of that. And it's why I told Jill that her focus this year is more on community development. She's taken on a city. She's taken on the city of Dayton. Are you going to work with Dayton?
I'm going to work with everyone that I can.
Well, we're hoping that she's taking a course, and she's supposed to work with a community on some community development pieces, and she's talked to the city of Dayton. We've been out there on some of the things that they're working on. And, you know, some of the things that we do are small, but they're big for the community. Like in Cottage Grove, Senator Prozanski, we gave them a grant to develop a new sign coming into their community, and you think, a sign, what's that going to do? Whoa, it did a lot. It helped spur economic revitalization in downtown for the community, and it's tremendous. And one of the properties I just visited, the multifamily housing property in Cottage Grove, they just did a renovation. NeighborWorks Umpqua was the organization that put the money into that, and oh, my goodness. That thing was so beautiful, what they did to those apartments. It was so incredible. And someone had the foresight. Who would have thought? So along the walkways, there's a sign in the middle that tells people, you know, certain things. Well, they make the sign removable. And the walkways are big enough so you can drive your vehicle up to your apartment and move your things in without walking all the way from the parking lot. These are seniors. These are disabled people. That was really a critical forward-thinking thing. And Betty Tam, who's the executive director of NeighborWorks Umpqua, will rock your socks. The woman is just a powerhouse. So these are the kinds of people we work with in your communities, and I just absolutely love it. So if you know anybody that wants to partner with us, let us know, because we're very excited about it. And really, there's only five rural area, non-rural areas in Oregon, and I'm sure you can guess what they are. Portland, Salem, Eugene, Springfield, and Bend. So everybody else, we can help. Of course, with the new census, some of our cities, like Redmond, is going to kind of fall out of our housing program eventually. But Bend used to be in our program, and there's a little brewery that got its start in Bend with a grant, well, four loans from us. And what is that brewery? You got it. And look where they are today. And it started with rural development, with a business and industry loan. So that's where we take people from the small to the big and employ Oregonians and Americans like at ORPET. So I hope I gave you something to think about tonight when you go home. Order this book. From
OSD. We're going to order a few.
Yeah, it's real. I ordered several copies for my staff to read. It's really great. Bruce Weber's wonderful to work with. So is Bruce Sorte. I guess I should stop talking so you can go home today.
I just want to say that your demure personality is retained.
You know, I was going to be on my best behavior today.
You're good.
I told Jill, I said, well, I guess I'll go in and be a little quiet, but that'd be out of character.
It would be out of character. So, any further questions? I just want to say thank you very much for coming, and I look forward to seeing you in Corvallis, because I will probably be there for the summit, and then eventually over on the coast again.
We'll see you in Lincoln City, is where you're going to do it this year in August.
Yeah, August, yep.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. Senator Przanski, I know I'm going to see you somewhere.
In town.
Yeah. When we went to Veneta, we ate at the that little restaurant, Our Daily Bread.
Very
really nice. You know, that's the other cool thing. When we go to these small towns, we get to find the great places to eat, and we just ask the locals, where's the place to go eat? And in Burns, they told us where to go, and so we went, and the guy was a 30-plus-year ex-BLM employee who had just bought this restaurant 2 years ago, and he bought it because of its history and its reputation, and he had put some investments in it, and he wants to put some more, and so I gave him my card, and I said, we help businesses in rural Oregon, so there you go.
What was the name of that one?
The Pine Room.
Yeah.
It's right across from Sterling Bank, and we partner with banks and credit unions. In fact, the credit union, one of the credit unions in Coos Bay, partnered with us on the largest credit union B&I loan, business and industry loan in the country for $6 million. That was really cool. That was with a winery.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of work with just about everyone. And the value-added producer program, grant program, is really the neat one because it helps businesses that are just small fledgling businesses grow and expand. And there's a business here. You went with one of the administrators, the one with the Savannah Oak Farm, and they make wood flooring.
Zena
Wood Products, and we got them a value-added producer grant and awarded that last year, and we did it with the undersecretary here, and the guy got so excited, he jumped up from the table almost in tears, and he says, I got to go call my employee who I just laid off and tell him he can come back to work. And we said, wait a minute, it takes a little bit of time to get the money. But, you know, that's the cool thing. Small businesses grow, and that's what they want. That's exactly what they want. So we're the government, and we are here to help you.
And with
on that note.
We'll say thank you, and we're going to close our informational meeting.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very, very much.
Fascinating. And Kathy Lowe says hello to you.
Oh, say hi, Kathy.
I called her when you got appointed, and I said, you'll never guess who's back. And she said, oh, tell Betsy hello.
Thank you. She's a good friend.
She lives down in Albuquerque now.
And with that, we'll close our hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.